You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Fort Townsend, and I am Steve Evans. This is a live follow-up to the broadcast that you just heard from Standing Rock, and I'm here with Chris Bricker, who brought you that report from Standing Rock, and also with Megan Claflin, who is the spokesperson for the group that went there, and welcome Megan and Chris. And also we have Lois Barnett, who is sort of the doing her best job at being kind of a truth keeper about the things that are happening there. And she runs, what's the name of your website?
It's not mine, it's ours.
It's, yeah, right.
Pacific Northwest Stands with StandingRock.org.
Right, and that has been an invaluable source of information about the things that are happening at Standing Rock over the past weeks and months, and it's been a kind of difficult job, I understand, keeping track of the facts.
Oh, I'm thinking what you're referring to is the Facebook group, because that's
Facebook
separate
group.
From
that's
the website.
Facebook, right. Yeah, right,
but
right. Okay.
Although
yeah,
right. they are serving each other.
I was thinking of actually your Facebook page.
Yes, the Facebook page is called Pacific Northwest Standing Rock Support. And there's another local Facebook group called Stand with Standing Rock Jefferson County. And there's a collective of humans here in our wonderful community who are this group. We are Pacific Northwest Stands with Standing Rock.
Oh, right.
And yeah, and if you're concerned about Standing Rock, then you're part of it. So I'm just considering myself like a secretary working for the, you know, our tribe. And so is Amber Jones and Jenny Mae Hilliard, other people, Caroline Anderson, Danny right. Milholland, Megan, all kinds of people working together.
Right, there's quite a large group. Right. There was a sort of debrief session at Rosewind last Saturday that I was only able to attend about the first hour of that. But that it sounds like it was quite the incredible experience, Megan. I mean, maybe you could sort of tell a little bit about that debrief and the kinds of things that the people were saying.
We had a gathering at Rosewind on Saturday, and it was a really joyous occasion. You know, everyone who went on the caravan, some of us knew each other beforehand, and some of us got to know each other. All of us got to know each other very well in that short period of time, working together, living together, cooking and serving together, praying together. So I think one of our biggest struggles as we came back from Standing Rock was just missing each other and missing that camaraderie and that community. So Saturday gave us the opportunity to get face-to-face again and to have a little bit of time once we had the week to kind of process what we'd seen and experienced, and to share that with each other and to share that with other members of the community who had been so supportive in getting us there. So it felt like a nice kind of opportunity to take a breath and to look behind and then look forward.
I was unfortunately not able to be there for that looking forward part, but that was something that I was really interested in. And so I'd like to know what plans were being made on Saturday and how maybe your view of those plans may have changed on Sunday with this huge news that came down.
Well, if you know Danny Milholland and Paul Majid, our wonderful co-leaders for the caravan, they've got all kinds of ideas. And the caravan and the community have all kinds of ideas. We want to take the sacred fire that we rallied around at Oshetisiko in camp, and we want to bring that home in our hearts. And we will be doing a public presentation. We're working out the final time, date, place, details on that today. So we'll give the community that information here in the next day or two. It will be this month sometime. So part of what the camp tasked us with was bringing that message home. And so that public presentation will be a part of that. There is talk of going back out to Standing Rock as a caravan, creating kind of a home base for Pacific Northwest tribal members and community members, somewhere for them to land. that could include a semi-permanent structure, something like a traditional longhouse, something that really speaks to the architecture of our Pacific Northwest tribes. More and more things. I think that we're still having those conversations.
Well, that's interesting. You know, thinking of continuing to build the camp. Of course, today was the deadline. I mean, the Army Corps of Engineers sort of seems to have a split personality here, because last week they put out an announcement that, as of today, everybody at Ocheti Sakhalin would be trespassers and prosecutable. And there was some speculation as to whether there was going to be, you know, like a open warfare there today. And then yesterday they make this announcement that the easement will not be granted. So where were you, Chris, yesterday when you got the news?
I was home, and my wife actually walked in and put her cell phone in my face, and I saw the decision, and frankly, I started crying because of just the intensity of the experience that I had just had and what I came home with, which was just this power of the power of prayer, ceremony, symbolism, and nonviolent protest. I don't like to use the word protest, but you know, and how effective that is and how effective that can be. This is such a multi-layered event, all the way from the whole process of the Army Corps of Engineers, I want to say rubber stamping, but you know, basically not really doing enough due diligence in many people's opinion about what the effect of the pipeline might be by bringing it on that route instead of the original proposed route, which was nixed by the Bismarck City Council or whoever it was, and then they proposed a route that's through Sioux Heritage.
The announcement, I gather, was met at the camp, I mean, according to all of the newspaper accounts, with a sort of jubilation and great celebration yesterday. But at the same time, I know there is a lot of mistrust, and the point has been repeatedly made that we're going to have a new president in a little more than a month, I guess, And actually, Donald J. Trump is variously reported as still being, or until very recently as being, a stockholder in Energy Transfer Partners, creating what I think is a classic, you know, conflict of interest. But the Trump administration has made it very clear that they support the pipeline and they're going to be putting it through there. So. Yesterday, David Archambault, the chairman of the Sioux chairman, was quoted as saying, "Okay, great, we can all go home now and spend our winters with our families by the warmth of our hearths." But I know that there is not agreement about that, and people are saying, "So, Lois, what can you tell us about that?"
The perspective that I bring to this and why I'm so passionate about my involvement with it is that I was involved with Native American rights back in the 70s, so this is not new territory for me, and was involved with getting medical supplies to Wounded Knee, spent time in the Rosebud Reservation, have a connection with the people there, the Lakota there. And there has been, as part of the colonization of the indigenous people, what exists as these tribal councils. And they are a westernized or a colonized form of government. They are not the indigenous way of, I don't even want to say the word governing the people. They don't even use that language. It's not their law. Their law is natural law. And so tribal government has its pros and its cons. It's necessary in order to interface with the fact that you know, the settlers came and took over most all of the land. So there's the tribal council is an interface between the Native American people as a whole and the U.S. government. So it's a necessary entity. But there are many, many Native Americans who want nothing to do with the tribal council because they see it as part of the colonization. So you're never going to get every Native American on the same page about anything that has to do with the tribal council. And that's not to say that I have any feelings that the tribal council is good or bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just trying to explain when you hear two different, very clear, respected leaders like David Archambault, and then there's LaDonna Brave Bull Alyard, who's the founder of Sacred Stone Camp, saying the complete opposite on the same day. David Archambault saying, okay, we can pack up and go home. And LaDonna Brave Bull says, we're not going anywhere. And just to try to give a little background to that. And LaDonna is, I heard her speak that she's serving on the tribal council now. So she's trying to bridge, you know, by being in there. So it's a tricky, it's more complex than we can even imagine. You know, even with the experience that I have with Native Americans, which is not, you know, it's not a claim to a great quantity, but it's of substance. And even with that, I know that I'm just barely touching on how complex it is for Native Americans just to continue to fight for their existence.
Well, not only how complex, but also how amazing it was to see so many nations, so many groups of indigenous peoples gathering in this one spot.
Yes, and reuniting and forming a cohesion amongst 350 tribes, at least, I've heard at this point. That is a victory in and of itself. The reuniting of the Ocheti Shakoin, the Seven Councils Fire of the Great Sioux Nation, is a victory in itself. All of these tribes coming from all over the world, the Maori are there. It's just, it's staggering, beauty.
Coming into the camp.
So juxtaposed, the complexity, but also the beauty and the success and the victory that is at hand. So there's great reason for rejoicing.
I think it's really a fascinating kind of alliance that has formed here. And one of the most, I think surprising to me has been the recent large influx of vets, you know, who have come into the camp. I understand. I mean, it's funny. There's like different estimates, 2,000, 4,000. But, you know, a lot of vets have come to serve this, and they're standing in uniform supporting this. And I've been thinking about that in the light of a couple of weeks back, I did a Compass story with Gary Buckman of Big Wolf Trading Company here in town, and he's a Lakota Sioux and had just come back from there. And when I interviewed him, he put Standing Rock in the context of hundreds of years of conflict. And of course, the American military has traditionally been on the other side. And so the fact that all of these vets are coming and standing at their side is just, I think, a really moving thing. And I think it's like an important presence. I don't know what part it played in this decision, but I mean, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers is also a military organization.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there is the point that the Native American population has the highest rate percentage-wise of representation in the armed services. So it's like, I don't know how to then speak to that, but that's a fact.
You know, just it's like this whole idea that this whole thing that kept going through my soul when I was there was that that we were walking through history. We weren't walking there as observers. We were watching the re-empowerment of the victims of manifest destiny. And that was so powerful. And one of the constant reminders that were given at the camp by the organizers and the people that were doing the training, the mobilization trainings and all of the rest of that, was that we are here to dispense with our what was the phrase, Megan, our colonial attitude.
Mm-hmm. Our settler attitude,
even in terms of problem solving. Mm-hmm. You know, it was up to the alliance to make the decisions. It was up to the elders to impart their wisdom on what was done every day at that camp.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there was a very successful effort to keep the atmosphere in the camp basically sort of positive and on a high sort of spiritual plane, and actually to dampen any sort of rumors that might go around that would tend to breed, you know, like anger and hatred and so on. And there's a sheet that I think, Lois, were you responsible for like putting this together about all these different rumors? Maybe you could like talk about some of the rumors that were flying around.
Well, this is a statement straight up from LaDonna Brable Allard that she posted to Facebook, and then Dallas Goldtooth posted to Facebook. This was 2 days ago now, Friday. So do you want me to just
tell us what some of those things are?
No, the governor cannot stop supplies from coming into the camp. No, DAPL is not buying up the hotel rooms at Prairie Nights. No, people are not being sprayed with chemicals. No, little girls have died at camp. No, we did not kill 30 cows or buffaloes with arrows. No, we did not shoot arrows at planes. No, we did not throw any propane bottles at the police. No, there are no weapons at camp. No one is getting paid to protest. There's just a few more. This movement is not outsiders coming in. It is the people of the Native Nations who are standing with our allies. No, Morton County cannot raid the camp. This is federal land under the Army Corps of Engineers, and the county police is under the county. They can only care for things in the county, which is under the states. This is so complex. They can only care for the things in the county, which is under the states, and the states control the county, which the state is under the federal government, who control the state government. So it would have to be an order from the president, and that is not going to happen. That was number 11. 12, no, CPS cannot come and take children away from their families. 13, no, they cannot close down the school. So she put this out because rumors are one of the worst enemies to the cohesion.
Right, that one rumor about the chemical warfare was
being sprayed on the camp itself. Yeah,
right, and that actually was circulating just as the Chautauqua bus was leaving.
Yeah.
The Unitarian parking lot here, and it got brought up in the circle there, and I think it was you who stood up and said, "That's not been verified," but there was like a white dust on seen on vehicles in the camp and so on. I guess that was sort of the source of the rumor.
Speak to a possibility about that from having spoken with Amber Jones, who was there that morning. There was an unusually heavy fog, and she said it actually felt eerie in camp. It was so dense, and I've seen plenty of videos of camp, and that's kind of where I have a different perspective from the people who've been there who have bring back the gold, you know. But I've gotten to watch all these videos, and in the morning when the sun comes up, you can see before the air gets moving, you know, when the thermals are shifting in the morning time, you can see the smoke from the campfires. You know, a haze above camp. Mm-hmm. It's there.
Right.
It's like an elephant in the room. I'm sorry, but
it's
there's
like an inversion,
a lot of,
you know,
right. There's like an inversion, right? So then you put fog on top of it, a very heavy fog, and the white particulate. That's right. My take from speaking with Amber. Settled on tarps, and it would have settled on everything, but it'd be visible on the non-porous surfaces.
Basically, it's just ash.
Yeah, and then of course, people in camp can only see as far as they can see in camp. But then Amber, left camp that morning to come back to Port Townsend, and she said she was very surprised to find that that fog covered more than half of North Dakota.
Wow.
So it was not a fog of chemicals that had been sprayed on camp. It was a fog.
Right. We're about to run out of time here. One more question I wanted to address to Megan, which is, I have some friends who really, thought they would now go to Standing Rock. I mean, they were enthused by all of the reports. Should they still go? Are you going back?
That's a good question. I think that anyone considering going to Standing Rock at the moment needs to go through a similar process as the caravan went through. There is very good information available, and you need to have an honest conversation with yourself. Are you physically strong enough? It's cold. It's the winter there. Are you emotionally strong enough? Are you mentally in the right place? And can you... can you adhere to the rules, to the values, to that culture of camp, of being peaceful, of being prayerful, of being mindful to keep Indigenous centered? And I think what the decision came down the other day, we can celebrate about. It was a small victory, and I think we need to celebrate that. Does that mean that the battle is over? Definitely not.
Great. Okay, well, so we have to wrap up here. And now Lois just passed me a note saying that there is an organization meeting on the 9th. Where is that going to be?
7 o'clock at Rosewind Commons, and All are welcome.
Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for joining us on short notice this morning. Megan Claflin, Lois Barnett, and DJ Krisberger, and I am Steve Evans.
Thank you so much, and this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. Stay tuned for the Bryce Man and Box Chocolates.